This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
We're going to start the 8 o'clock hour, though. We're going to go to Pittsburgh. Friend of the show?
Yeah, friend of the show.
And got to be honest with you, a little disappointed this morning that broadcast communication newspaper magnate Paul Zeiss is coming to us from an office building. We've had cars. We've had golf course parking lots. We've had a lot of things. And, I mean, it's nice to see you. It's great to see you. But an office building seems kind of a letdown. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I figured I would try and do, like, look like I am somewhat of a professional. I know that that's probably hard for people to believe, but figure, you know, the lovely confines of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, where I've worked for, I don't know, 20-some, I can't even do the math, guys, 25, 24, something like that. Who knows?
All right.
Well, let's go big picture here, because it's been a brilliant job by Pat Narduzzi and a great effort by this Pitt team. I know you kind of hinted on the fact that, hey, if things bounce right, this team's got the potential of going double digits in the win column. And they do that for the first time since 1981. Paul, you mentioned you've been there a long time. What about the vibe that this team has given the city of Pittsburgh?
Well, considering the other team that plays in Heinz Field has been has not given this city a whole lot to be happy about. You know, Pitt is obviously a team that a lot of people are excited. I think one of the best parts about Pitt for fans is they're exciting and they're fun to watch. I mean, if this was a team that, you know, played and ran the ball and played defense and, you know, tried to win close to the vest and they had the same record, I don't know that they would have captured as much of the city and as much of the excitement as they have. But, I mean, this is a team, let's face it, the most exciting teams in football are teams that have bad defenses and great offenses. And that's what this team is. So, you know, in every game, both teams are, you know, alive in every single game they've played. The difference is this year, Pitt is finally the team that actually has the best offense.
Paul, you had a hint early on. In fact, I saw it on social media over the weekend. You're one of the guys that thought this team could win double figures. What transpired? What were you thinking then? And why did they prove you right?
Well, I mean, I think that this is, again, we can come up with all the cliches about defenses win championships and all the other stuff, but football is an offensive game. Whether it's the NCAA or whether it's the NFL, and in order to be really, really good, I mean, you got to have a quarterback. You got to have a guy that can make throws down the field. You got to have a guy that can make throws under pressure. And, you know, the minute that Kenny Pickett said, hey, I'm not going to the draft, I'm coming back, you know, my thoughts were, here's a guy who really last year was starting to really figure it out last year. You know, Pat Narduzzi's recruited, as you can see, some really good receivers. I thought the offensive line is, you know, going to be a year older for the most part. I think four out of the five were back. And, you know, they brought in a transfer. So I thought you got a good, really good offensive line. You've got great receivers. And you've got maybe the best quarterback in the league. This is going to be a team that's going to be a hard team to deal with, and it's come exactly the way I thought it would. You know, it would come. I mean, even the games they lost shootouts basically. So it's not surprising to me at all. I thought the other part of it is, and this is probably something that, you know, we don't want to talk about here, you know, on ACC Network. But I thought the ACC was going to be down this year, and it's proven correct.
So is it as simple as Saturday night, hey, first of 40 wins? I mean, they're both averaging 42 a game. I mean, can we oversimplify breaking this game down other than, hey, on your mark, get set, go? Because both offenses can flat out light it up.
Yeah, they both can, and I think that's what's going to make it really interesting is it's going to come down to defense. I mean, which defenses can make a few stops? Or better yet, which offenses make a few mistakes? Whatever way you want to look at it, you know. And that's going to be the key in this game. I think both offenses have a chance to go up and down the field. At that point, when you're in a game like that and you're a defense, it's all about just making a big play, making a play here, making a play to get a stop there, you know, getting off the field on a third down, you know, getting an interception or, you know, whatever. You know, frankly, that's what it comes down to. And so we'll see what happens. I think the one thing I'll say, guys, is I would be remiss if I didn't say this. For all of the pain and the anguish and everything else that Pitt fans have gone through since Dan Marino left campus, it feels like God has really kind of pay them back in full this year with all of the ways that he has blessed them and given them breaks. It feels like, you know, and put it this way, in years past, North Carolina would have went for two and won the game on Thursday night. In years past, when Virginia got the ball back tied, the ball wouldn't have been snapped 90 miles over top of the guy's head. You know, they would have went down and kicked the field goal to win. In years past, they wouldn't have gone through an entire season. And you look at the rankings, I guess Clemson will be back in the rankings, but they basically did not beat a single ranked opponent to get to 10 wins. You know, and in years past, it would have been that North Carolina would have got the ball first in overtime. They would have scored, and then the hurricane would have hit. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where everything that has needed to go right for Pitt has, and here they are.
Paul, I'm going to ask, and you're the most qualified person we can have on this show to answer this question. I mean, you've grown up around it. You've lived it. You know it. I'm not saying Kenny Pickett's Dan Marino, okay? And I know Matt Kavanaugh is at a certain place because he won a national championship, right? You win a national title, it changes the game, and we know Pitt can't win the national title. But where is Kenny Pickett in the pantheon of quarterbacks at the University of Pittsburgh in your mind if he wins Saturday night?
It's funny, we've had this debate a few times in the last week, and you know, some of these millennials and young guys that they act like the world started in, like, say, 2005 kind of forget that a guy by the name of Dan Marino played at Pitt. And as I have to remind them, in three of Dan Marino's four seasons, they finished in the top five. He won a Fiesta Bowl, a Gator Bowl, and a Sugar Bowl. So, let's not go there. Obviously, Dan Marino is the greatest to ever wear the uniform. Kenny Pickett, to me, is second. I know Matt Kavanaugh won a national title. That team was 100% about, Tony Dorsett, a great defense, and Matt Kavanaugh just sort of being a crafty, tough, hard-nosed kind of, winning kind of Pittsburgh quarterback. I wouldn't even put Matt Kavanaugh in the top three or four, to be honest. I mean, I don't even think, if I'm not mistaken, he didn't even start that season as a starter. I think Tyler Pelko is a guy that people forget about. Pete Gonzalez was a great quarterback on a horrible team. Somehow got him to six wins in a bowl. Rod Rutherford obviously had Larry Fitzgerald to throw for him. So they've had some great, really good quarterbacks. Nate Peterman, despite what's happened to him in the NFL, was a really good quarterback for them too. But I think Kenny is, second behind Dan Marino. But those of you in Pittsburgh who are under the age of 40, let's not lose our minds. Dan Marino. Dan Marino.
Paul, for argument's sake, let's say Pitt wins this game Saturday night. We can talk about Pickett and all that stuff. What does it do for Pat Narduzzi, big picture, if Pitt wins an ACC championship?
I think the first thing it does, and most importantly, is it sort of validates, Heather Light giving him an extension when everyone was kind of like, well, why are you giving this guy an extension? What has he really done? At the end of the day, that's the kind of thing that you look, a lot of these athletic directors are bailing out quick on guys and firing guys in 3 and 4 years. Pitt has basically been down that road for so long. I mean, they had, what'd they have? I want to say 6 coaches in 18 months, if you count the interim guys, right after Dave Wannstedt. If you start with Dave Wannstedt and go to when they got Paul Christ, I think it was 6 coaches in 18 months. They went down that road before. They don't want to go there. They want stability. And, whatever you want to say about Pat Narduzzi, believe me, he's got his flaws. And, whatever he gets in an extension and a raise, he should give part of it to Kenny Pickett because he's obviously saved the guy's, entire existence here. But they stuck with him. He's got a program that is built. He's got a program that he's recruited well. They've got a lot of good. I mean, obviously, it's the oldest team in the country, and that helps. They've got 27 seniors and, 14 of those, what they call super seniors. They've got some seventh-year guys and stuff. I get it, but at the end of the day, they got a lot of good young players as well. He's recruited well. Sometimes you just got to stick with a guy and hope that he finds the right combination of assistants and players to pay off, your faith in him. And so I think that's the biggest thing here is, I had to chuckle again because, as a, you know, this whole thing with Marino and people forgetting about him, we can't think beyond like the last 2 months, because, you know, Pitt fans are running around saying this coming up on Saturday is the biggest game they played maybe since the Marino era. And it's like, well, no, it's the biggest game they've played since 2 years ago when they were here at the same exact place with the same exact stakes. But anyway, you know, and that's something too. Pat Narduzzi's got, you know, whatever you want to say about the Coastal, he's figured out how to win it twice. And you know what? Pitt is going to be a team that probably is going to be knocking on the door at the Coastal every single year just because he's built a good program.
Paul, again, assuming Pitt wins this championship, and I know how much that state loves its football, whether it be high school, college, or pro. They follow it. They know it. They get it. Given the fact that James Franklin just signed a crazy deal, right? And to be honest with you, the last 2 years, Penn State's been as average as the day is long. And here's Pat Narduzzi possibly bringing hardware back to Pittsburgh. Where does that fit in the pantheon of the state, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, with where Pitt's going and where Penn State's going?
Well, I mean, you know, the guy a couple of hours away, you know, his mantra or whatever has been, we're going to dominate the state. clearly in the last couple of years, they haven't gotten it done. And so I feel like, you know, when you look at Pitt, obviously winning the ACC would be a big boost. Getting them into a New Year's Six Bowl or whatever they call it, that would be huge. I mean, I think there's no question about it. You know, there's been a number of years that, you know, Penn State has been better than Pitt, but I don't think there's any rational person that would argue Penn State is better than Pitt this year, and that's pretty big. I mean, because, again, for Pat Narduzzi, you're going out, you're recruiting against Penn State, you're recruiting in the state. They go to Philadelphia. They go across the state, even here in Western PA. I mean, it's big to be able to say that. But, you know, as you guys know, the changing landscape of college football, teams don't play each other anymore that should play each other. And so, you know, it's much, much easier to say, well, we're better than them when you never have to play them. Think about that.
Yeah. No, interesting. Paul, I want to finish on a thought here historically about Pittsburgh and the ACC. And you know this because – I think you've had probably the same conversations up there on some of the pregame stuff I've heard when I've been there for broadcast. The Pitt fit in the ACC has always been, it was a topic the first 3, 4, 5 years they were in the league. And I understand that. It's still kind of a topic in Boston. They've been in the league, what, almost 20 years it seems like now. But now it feels more comfortable. The success, it feels more comfortable, whether it be, you know, football for sure. But when the headline sports, football in particular here, starts to make that move. And you mentioned Heather Like. The job she's done to calm the waters of the AD position there should not be forgotten in all this either, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think obviously that's another position that they had some turnover, you know, over the course of time. And you know, I think people here probably expect that if a bigger job opens up, she'll be high on the list, you know, I mean, for a lot of reasons. And that's, you know, part of what being – Pitt is. I mean, you're, you know, in some ways, you know, there's the elite jobs, and then there's, you know, that kind of second level, and that's where Pitt is, you know, and that's okay, because there's a lot more teams there than there are at the elite level. Right. I think the big thing, unfortunately, and, you know, the other day I sat and watched UMBC run Pitt out of the Peterson Center. Until that program figures it out, and I'm talking about the basketball program, I don't think anybody will ever be happy or comfortable in the ACC. You know, football, you know, people love football, and it is the number one sport. But for a lot of years, you know, the Peterson Event Center was the place to be in the winter in Pitt, in yeah. Pittsburgh. I mean, if you went to a game at Pitt, you know, if it was Connecticut versus Pitt, 1-3, or, you know, Pitt against Syracuse or whatever, or even Pitt-Villanova, Pitt-Notre Dame, you'd go over there, you'd see Steelers over there, you'd see local politicians over there, you'd see, you know, dignitaries, you'd see, you know, Mike Tomlin used to go to the games, you know, Penguin players over there. I mean, it was the place to be. Now, I mean, I was at the Peterson Center on Saturday to cover the exciting UMBC versus Pitt game. And first of all, UMBC scored 87 points. You know, listen, there was a time in the Jamie Dixon, Ben Howland era where these, you know, alphabet soup teams would come in. They wouldn't be able to score 87, four of them in a row, like four of them in a row combined. couldn't have scored 87 against Pitt's teams. And this team scored 55 at halftime. There might have been 300 people in the building. I mean, that program is dead right now. And so until that gets up and running, you know, there will always be the, well, we should have never went to the ACC. When we went to Big East, we could go to New York City and D.C. and recruit basketball players. And we had both programs were pretty good. And that's sort of the last, the last piece. And I'll tell you, people here are puzzled because they thought 4 years ago they made a home run ACC hire in bringing Jeff Capel in, but it just hasn't worked.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the time as always. Packer has ordered up some really nice weather for you this weekend, and he could also be your consigliere to set up tee times, even though he hadn't swung a club in 24 years.
70 degrees, well, Paul.
That would be helpful because I've been striking out already. I mean, you guys all booked tee times like 3 weeks early or something. I mean, what's going on down here?
Take care, my man. Be well.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Paul Zeiss, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, one of the great media darlings of the Steel City. He's always fun to visit with. And what great historical perspective.
No doubt.
So,
and he's 100% right. Let's not confuse Dan Marino.
Oh.
I mean, spot on. Take a step back. Take a deep breath. You understand how history works. Wasn't just last week.
We got time for a Hey Woody going to break.
Go ahead.
My dad used to say, later years, you know, we did do something around here before Jordan hit that jump shot.
Yeah. It's so true, though. So true.
I mean, my brother and I look at each other. Anybody, you know, we did do something around here before Jordan hit the jump shot. Dad, I got it. We had basketball before 1982. Got it. Yeah, we're good.
God bless him. He's looking down at us right now.
How about Zeiss?
Yes. And yeah. You two morons still have jobs.
Yeah. And y'all are sitting there talking about it. I bet that's a hell of a way to make a living.
Yeah.
All right. When we come back, what were the toughest positions? Well, we've already outlined two with David Hale. Quarterback was a little more defined than you might think. But man, some of these defensive spots. We'll get to him. Andrea Adelson coming up in about 12 minutes as Packer and Durham rolls on a Tuesday.
The Packer and Durham podcast. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Fitting climax before we find out who's going to the college football playoff, who's going to New Year's Day Six Bowls. ACC's got 10 teams bowl eligible. We'll hopefully get those answers when we roll back in here on a Monday. So that's that deal.
Coming up top of the hour, the All-ACC football ballot will be revealed, and we will tell you who is first, who is second, and who is honorable mention. 9 a.m. right here on Packer and Durham.
I got some notes. There's some interesting calls here.
We talked about quarterback, but we also need to talk about defensive line here. We talked on defensive ends. David Hale creates, and again, the access to some of his information really helps you when you put the ballot together when it comes to individual performances. And that's the thing we dealt with this year, I think, Pac, that was probably that made it tougher. You had a lot of like teams, right? You had a lot of teams. We just talked about 6 through 10. You got them in one block, right?
We have five teams at 6 and 6. Florida State's 5 and 7. Syracuse, 5 and 7. So
yeah.
You got seven teams basically connected at the hip.
Yeah. And so when you start to then break out, and remember, he mentioned Miles Murphy of Carolina. Carolina's Miles Murphy as being a really good player on a defense that might not have had a great year. Well, then you have great defenses, and you're trying to pull guys from those great defenses, Clemson, NC State, things like that. So when you get into the defensive line discussion, it becomes fascinating because you're dealing with ends and you're dealing with tackles. That's one into itself altogether. But the quarterback thing with Kenny Pickett, Sam Hartman, Brennan Armstrong. That's the way it went on my ballot. Okay, David showed you his. He had Devin Leary on it.
There was no Brennan Armstrong on David Hale's bracket.
That's correct.
None.
Right.
One, two, or three.
Right. And I think you're going to see that Sam Howell, Sam Hartman, and Brennan Armstrong were going to be kind of – and Malik Cunningham, who, by the way, we talked about a ton.
Had a great year.
Okay. That's five guys. And you got to pick three. You got to pick three.
Doesn't work.
It's
kind of like the college football playoff. When you have five Power Five leagues in four spots, group of five on top of it, and an independent Notre Dame, it's hard. You only have so many spots. And that leads to people scratching their head going, hey, you guys ever watch football? I mean, that's what's going to happen when we make this announcement at 9 a.m. this morning. You're going to see some spots, and that's why we're kind of highlighting a couple positions here without tipping our hand, and you're immediately going to go, huh, how's that possible?
Well,
the answer is there's a lot of quality depth in this league in certain positions.
Okay, let me give you one of the let's use quarterback. We've already talked about it a lot, and I've been pretty forthright. It was Kenny Pickett, Sam Hartman, Brennan Armstrong for me. We're going to show you the QBR of the ACC quarterbacks here. Okay, this is just one stat. There are six in the top 22. Now, let me also say that I subscribe to David Hale's theory on this as well. Had Tyler Van Dyke been the quarterback from day one at Miami and posted comparable numbers, there'd be a massive jam.
But he didn't.
He didn't.
To make it cleaner than it needs to be.
So sometimes you wonder, how does the process of elimination work? How do you get to? Well, it comes down ultimately to how good the individual is and how good his team is. Okay? Because winning still is the objective. No matter what the stats are, winning is still the objective. And for me, Kenny Pickett and Sam Hartman were the two best quarterbacks of teams that were winning. Okay? Brennan Armstrong's numbers are phenomenal. They're historical in some respect. So are Tyler Van Dyke's. Their teams were not as successful. Same falls for Sam Howell. Malik Cunningham, phenomenal year. Success on the end of the whole team, it matters. Because the object, again, is to win. When you have spectacular performance of successful teams, that's a changer for me, Mark.
I get it. You know what else I get? I'm thrilled that I don't vote. Seriously.
This comes back to why you don't vote.
This is exactly why I don't vote. Mm-hmm. It's not that I don't have an interest. Of course I do. I follow this league. I follow college football. But there are so many impossible choices. I mean, you can't get this exactly right. You can get most of them right.
Right.
But you can't get it exactly right. And that's because we have so many good players. And I'm talking about for not only just the ACC, but nationwide. I mean, I'd even go big picture with the Heisman. I don't remember another year that we're going into the championship week and we don't know who the clear-cut Heisman leader is. In years past, I mean, this thing was solved 6 weeks ago. It's no different than when you're going to see this all-ACC release that we will announce at 9 a.m. this morning. Mm-hmm. You're going to go through this list and go, well, how did this vote process work? That's why we're taking time this morning for the first 2 hours to explain how it works and give you some names and figures and so forth. So when you see coming up here in 32 minutes, I'm just going to tell you, I said it yesterday, I'll say it again today, they're going to see some spots and you're going to go, no way.
Right.
Yeah, way. Mm-hmm. That's what we've got.
I'm going to give you one other thing too, as it relates to Kenny Pickett and the Heisman Trophy. Our company, ESPN, put a Heisman thing out on social media this weekend. It didn't feature Kenny Pickett. It's a sad miss by the ESPN college football people. It's a sad miss. They put C.J. Stroud on there, and he got smoked at Michigan.
Yeah, but he ought to be on
there. He's had a great year.
Yeah, I agree.
Bryce Young at Alabama had a great year.
Should be on there.
But Kenny Pickett deserves to be on there.
Should be on
there. But on the social media world, there are only four slots. We go through it every week with wide receiver U. Kenny Pickett deserves to be in New York because it's been a great league. Offensively, it's been a spectacular league, and he's the best player in the league, in my opinion. That being said, for him not to get the national recognition because his team has lost a couple ball games, it's sad. It speaks to the mind being made up and the agenda being held from the start of the season on. It's hard to crack. He's going to win double-figure games potentially. He's going to be a factor in the national race. He deserves to be in New York next weekend,
totally
in my opinion.
Totally agree.
And the fact that it's a question is a problem. Because people aren't willing to open their minds up from what they set in stone in August. And that's an issue.
And a lot of times there's a national narrative.
Absolutely.
And guess what happens in national narratives when people try to establish it early? This has always been my issue, Wes. When you try to establish a national narrative early, all of a sudden you don't want to admit you screwed up a month ago, 2 months ago. When all of a sudden it's been proven, hey, guess what? he or she, depending on the sport and the conversation, mm-hmm. should have been included.
Right.
So the fact that Kenny Pickett, if he doesn't end up in New York, and I've always had something with the Heisman. I think the Heisman at times has had whiffs beyond belief.
Yep.
But Kenny Pickett has earned the right to be in that conversation. Just saying.
Yeah.
Now, whoever wins it, tip the hat. Congratulations. Awesome. But, man, Kenny Pickett. I mean, Pitt's never won 10 games since, what, 1981?
Right.
First time in 40 years?
Yeah.
There's a reason for it, right?
And by the way, it speaks to some good in college football that a guy came back and didn't go.
That's where I was going to go next. You know, in this day and age where everybody talking about one and done in college hoops and, hey, guys are leaving after their junior year. Here's a guy that said, you know what? I enjoy college life.
Yep.
It's good. I don't mind coaching. I don't mind going out there and having fun. Roll up my sleeves. Let's get to work and put up some numbers. He did that.
Yep.
And so I think in this day and age, it's ridiculously refreshing to see somebody come back to college and go, guess what? The money can wait.
There you
Let's
go
play ball.
All right. When we come back, Andrea Adelson joins us. All ACC ballot, coaching carousel, and other elements to discuss with the AA. Packer and Durham, we're halfway home, and All ACC coming up top of the hour right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday morning.
And West Durham.
844 say ACCN. We're about 30 minutes away from the announcement of the All ACC football teams.
Yep.
You do not want to miss it. It will be intriguing. It will be interesting. You'll be surprised by some selections. And that's all we're going to tell you because we're sworn to secrecy.
That's all we're telling you. That's all we're going with.
We're sworn to secrecy.
All right. Let's go to Central Florida where Andrea Adelson has the puffy coat on this morning, which must mean it's somewhere near 50 degrees. That's all I can sort out. Is it somewhere near 50?
Wes, you know me too well as a Floridian. Yes, it is about 50 degrees right now in Orlando. And of course, I don't have the heat on. Last time I talked to you in August, right, I had no air conditioning. Well, now the house is down to like 68. So I need to find a way to stay warm on this very cold Florida morning.
68, the horror, Pack. The horror of 68 degrees.
I know.
My Cheez-Its are freezing. All right, let's get to football. By the way, it's going to be in the 70s up here in balmy Charlotte for football this week. All right, we get Pitt, we get Wake. They take care of business over the weekend. We just had Paul Zeiss on. Listen, two great offenses. And Andrea, I mean, really, like I said to Paul, is it as simple as, hey, first of 40 wins this game and wins a championship?
It could be. I'm actually looking more at the defenses and who has played better here down the stretch defensively. And when you look at what Pitt was able to do last week against Syracuse and Sean Tucker, I think the offenses are going to score, but which defense is going to be the one that steps up? And right now, I'm leaning more toward Pitt there, especially with some of the production they've been able to get on their defensive line of late has been outstanding. We're going to talk about the All-ACC team. I've got a couple of Pitt defensive linemen, either on my first, second, or third team that I filled out on my ballot. I've got a Pitt player in the secondary who's a first teamer on my ballot. So overall, yes, offense, great. But for me, it's going to come down to who can make more stops, and that's why I'm leaning Pitt.
All right, we could go quarterbacks here too. Two really successful quarterbacks do it in different ways. I mean, Kenny Pickett looks like he's cracked right from the mold of guys that are going to go to the league and at least have some presence early in their career, if not starting. Meanwhile, Sam Hartman, I hate to use the term journeyman because I was reminded on my last visit to Winston-Salem, he still classifies as a redshirt sophomore with all the free years the NCAA's been handing out. So, Andrea, what do you suspect out of that position in this game? Kenny's back on this stage, and Sam Hartman's here for the first time.
No doubt. And I think the experience that Kenny brings to the table, having been there before, maybe not had his best performance, and all he's learned along the way gives him an advantage headed into this game, especially because so much of the focus this season nationally, I know you guys were talking about how he wasn't on the Heisman list, and I completely agree with you guys about that, but There's been a lot of attention on Kenny Pickett this season. I'm not saying there hasn't been on Sam Hartman, but from a national perspective, I think Kenny has probably had to deal with that just a little bit more because of where Pitt has been, the fact that Pitt has played maybe a little bit more national games in terms of Tennessee and Clemson. And he's thrived on that stage this season. Not that Sam hasn't, but I just think because Kenny has that type of experience in a high-level game, that might give him a little bit more of an advantage headed into this one, you know, not to mention the fact that he has got an All-America receiver in Jordan Addison, who has been outstanding, especially with Pitt being so injured at the receiver position. And yet, even though Jordan is double-teamed, he still continues to make play after play. Wake obviously has got deep and talented receivers as well. The interesting part of the matchup for me is who's going to get more out of their run game, because that's an area where Pitt has struggled for consistency yet again this season. I know they've run the ball a little bit better here down the stretch, but both of these teams may have to rely a little bit on that run game more than Sam and Kenny in order to be able to get this job done so they can have a little bit of balance and keep the defenses off balance as well.
You know, Andrew, it's a great time of the year. Not only do you have championship week coming up this week, whether it be the ACC or anybody else, but you've also got this coaching carousel, which is about as crazy as I've ever seen. And it doesn't matter if it's Lincoln Riley in the middle of the night going from blue blood like Oklahoma to USC, or what happened with Brian Kelly with Notre Dame and LSU. We know here in the ACC, there's an opening at Duke. There's an opening at Virginia Tech. What do you foresee happening here? Do you get any sense that there's a lean for either Virginia Tech or Duke this part of the time or not? Still working on, you tell me, what do you think is going to happen here?
Well, and let's just start with Virginia Tech. I don't think this search has gone well for the Hokies. Let's just say that, because a couple of guys that they've targeted have said no. And so now you're at a situation where you're looking at who's left. I know initially they said they wanted a coach that had some head coaching experience. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to get somebody on the Power Five level who has head coaching experience, at least right now. A lot of assistants' names have come up. Another name that I've heard is Marshall's coach, Coach Huff, because he has got ties to the area. Strong recruiter in Virginia, high school coach I talked to said that would be his lean. But when you're in a situation where you make a decision and then some of the guys that you've targeted, like a Dave Clawson, turn around and say no, well, now it becomes obvious to your fan base that the guys that you wanted said no to you. And what does that mean about where your program is, how you're running the search, and who you're ultimately going to be able to get? So I wouldn't be surprised if Virginia Tech ends up with either a coach, head coach from the Group of Five level, or a Power Five assistant coach at this point. But in terms of getting a big name Power Five coach in there, I'm not sure that's going to happen. Now, as for Duke, I believe they announced that they've hired a search firm to help out new athletic director Nina King. I don't know Nina King as well as maybe some others do, because she's new in this role. I don't know what her preferences are in terms of which way she would lean for the type of coach that she's looking for. But one for me that checks off all the boxes is Oklahoma State's defensive coordinator, Jim Knowles, because of the time that he has spent there. Duke has slipped defensively since he left for Oklahoma State. He's familiar with what it takes to win at Duke. He was part of successful teams at Duke. And that's who I would be making a phone call to right now if I was Duke.
Andrea, interesting. I want to kind of show folks, and you know this line of thinking, let's show people how the dominoes kind of can work on this. 4 days ago, a hot name for Virginia Tech was Marcus Freeman, the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. Well, to show you how one job begets another vacancy that begets another vacancy, now, all of a sudden, Marcus Freeman's head coach is the new head coach in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And whose name is associated with potentially being the head coach at Notre Dame? Well, that would be Marcus Freeman. If he's not the head coach at Notre Dame, he could be the next head coach if Luke Fickell leaves Cincinnati. All those situations kind of cycled down toward Whit Babcock's vacancy and the rumored candidacy, whether he is or isn't, of Marcus Freeman. But that quickly shows people how fast the steps can be climbed or fallen on, right?
Well, and it also shows what happens when your top candidates say no, and now you're left scrambling when you've had the vacancy longer than Notre Dame, for example. Maybe you should have moved faster if that was a guy that perhaps you were considering. And so, again, that is all part of the situation that a lot of these schools are in. Either make a quick decision, target someone, they say no, now suddenly you've fallen behind. And it feels like right now, even though Virginia Tech has been open for longer, it feels like they've fallen behind a little bit because of what's happened early on in their coaching search. And that's never a good situation to feel like you're in, especially as more dominoes continue to fall, because Oklahoma obviously is now open. And one name we've heard is Shane Beamer. Well, I know Virginia Tech would love Shane Beamer, and Shane Beamer has said, no, I'm staying at South Carolina. But does the Oklahoma dynamic now change things for Shane Beamer? And does that mean Virginia Tech should try and make a move on Shane Beamer? So that's another domino potentially that has fallen or could fall for Virginia Tech as well.
All right, let's dive to this All-ACC. We talked about it an hour ago with David. This is as hard as I've ever had it. I mean, been doing it a while. It's sometimes pretty academic. This year was far from academic. I want to tackle linebackers here with you. We've talked about quarterbacks. We've talked about defensive ends. Linebackers in your world, was that difficult?
Yes, extremely difficult. I had about six guys that I was considering for three spots. And honestly, one of the toughest choices that I had to make was to leave James Skalski off my first team at linebacker. I wanted to get a couple of Clemson defensive players on this team because they've been so outstanding on defense, and this team would not be 9-3 without that defense, specifically without James Skalski and a couple plays that he made against Georgia Tech and Louisville. But in terms of some of the production numbers, ultimately, what I looked at with sacks, tackles for loss, the way some of these other linebackers were used, and the value of the player on the team, I ended up going with Drake Thomas at NC State, who I think has been outstanding for them all year long. I ended up going with Jones from Syracuse, and I ended up going with Abdullah from Louisville, because when you look at his production in particular, and I talked to Court Dennison about this, you know, their defensive coordinator, you know, he had been telling me all year, you know, people are sleeping on Yasir Abdullah, and he's done an outstanding job for us, really the most productive player that they had on defense. It's too bad Keytrell Clark got hurt, or else he probably would have been a first team All-ACC guy at corner. But in terms of the production that he's had, I gave him the nod over James Skalski. But Servassie Dennis was another guy at Pitt that I considered for the first team. It was just really difficult when you start to sit here and try and evaluate production versus team performance versus overall standing of the defense. Where are we going to slot these guys in? And so ultimately, I ended up with those three. But if James Skalski is on the first team and Servassie Dennis is on the first team, I will have no qualms with that, because I think those five guys in particular are all deserving of first team consideration.
It's interesting we talk about Skalski, and my ballot, I had Spector up there, because I thought Baylen Spector was sensational all year long, making plays in space for Clemson. Do they split the vote? I don't know that. I mean, but your point, right, Clemson was dominant defensively. You could pick Tigers, and I'm heavy in the secondary on Clemson. I love Clemson in the secondary. The thing that I keep coming back to in this pack is the inventory of player and eliminating the guy to go first to second to third. And they want you to pick nine. They want you to pick nine of them. And that's how you get to guys like Shaka Hayward of Duke. You had Yasir Abdullah Louisville up there. Nick Jackson of Virginia. Not a great defense, as we talked about earlier with David about Miles Murphy of Carolina pack. It's impossible.
That's why 9 a.m. this morning, I'm going to sit back with a smile on my face and watch people go crazy when they see this list. It's hard. It's really, really hard.
And by the way, Trenton Simpson wasn't even nominated from Clemson at linebacker. And I'm sure David probably spoke at length about that, because he was frustrated about that, not being able to give him a vote because he's a Simpson fan. So we just talked about all of Clemson linebackers, right, having the potential to be first team players. And we could say the same thing about a couple of their defensive linemen. You mentioned the secondary. How do you choose between Goodrich and Booth, or do you put them both on? I went with with Goodrich over Booth, who's on the second team in the safety position. Defensive line, same. So, you know, again, that has been the best defense across the board in the ACC. And so it's not a surprise that we're sitting here trying to figure out which of these Clemson players am I going to put on the first team versus some of the other deserving players in the ACC who had great years as well.
All right. Andrea Edelson covers the ACC for ESPN.com. Safe travels this week to the Queen City.
I'm leaving you in the capable hands of David Hale. I'm actually headed to Cincinnati this weekend.
Wow. Oh, well, with that said, I would leave on my sweater vest.
I would keep that puffy coat then. There we go. When we come back on this program, the night in basketball and wide receiver U, we have a winner. Who will it be? We'll tell you next. Packer and Durham continues on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Don't forget, we got ACC basketball for you. Triple header on Saturday. High noon, we'll take you to the Watsco Center in Miami. Tigers and Hurricanes open their league schedule. Then Wake Forest, Virginia Tech. That's one Pack will have his eye on mid-afternoon. Mike Young's team welcomes Steve Forbes and the Deeks. And then at 4 o'clock, Syracuse is in Tallahassee against Florida State. And you know what you get after that? Huddle. Pregame. ACC Football Championship presented by Subway. All on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. There you go. How about that?
Saturday's going to be a good couch day.
Couch?
Yeah.
You don't move on any Saturday.
That's true, too.
I mean, you haven't moved.
But this Saturday is going to be a really good couch day. Yeah. Actually, I'll take that back. I'm going to be moving the following Saturday. I won't be on the couch.
Moving here?
No, I won't be here. Army-Navy.
Oh, yeah, you're going to Philly.
New York.
New York, rather.
Yeah.
You going after the show on Friday?
Yes.
Yeah.
To do a show on Friday afternoon and Saturday morning. And
then come back.
Go to the game.
Go to the game, too? Oh,
do
man.
The city.
I'd love to go
see
to that
my
game.
Buddy. It's my favorite game. Got to tell you. Phil Savage, looking forward to getting up with him.
Oh, yeah.
New York Jets.
Guys have a blast.
Jets. Yeah, it'll be a big weekend.
All right. Wide receiver U, one of our closer ones.
Apparently.
Yeah, turned into a really good competition. So I think we did a really nice job narrowing down the four.
I thought so, too.
Yeah. Let's show you who finished fourth as we start the countdown. We go 4-1 here. Best catches from week 13. Number four, right at about 18% of the vote, Ontario Wilson. Still a great catch.
Hard to believe that's fourth.
I'm telling you. These are the fans speak here. They determine. You know that. The reverse angle. They got a lot of cameras in that Florida State game. Great grab. There's a look. Look at that.
Do we have one from the drone?
We don't have one from the drone.
How about that?
All right. Next. Fourth. Charleston Rambo.
This will be third, Wes.
Or third, rather. Third is Charleston Rambo. 23%. So we go 18 to 23.
How about that being third place right there?
Well, crazy, isn't it?
Bad. It's a great catch.
All right. Number two, 27.7% of the vote. Andrew Booth. That's a great play. All right. Yep. Andrew Booth.
Got it.
Number one, 31% of the vote. Never buy dinner. Emeka Emezi.
Thank God he didn't run the ball. Emeka would have never won the award.
Where's Roddy? Where's Roddy Jones? Can we get... You got to run the ball here. No, you're going to throw it to Emeka for the win.
Great catch, though. God, what a comeback. 99.9% chance of victory. FPI. 2.5 minutes to go.
Wrong crazy, answer. Right?
That was a crazy game. It was a great week of games. Those are four spectacular grabs right there. Gotta tell you. Pretty good.
Great competition.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? How about that? 0-2 ACC win last night in the opening night of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. That's okay. We got six more tonight, kids. See how it goes. Got a great set of games, by the way. I mean, great sets of games.
Number one, Duke in action, yeah. Ohio State.
That's right.
Number two, Purdue's got Florida State coming to Mackey Arena, one of the great venues in all of college basketball.
So you got double headers now tonight, ESPNU, ESPN2, and ESPN, all ACC Big Ten Challenge games. So you got to keep the clicker greased up and ready to go tonight.
Yep. We need to get the rally caps on. 0-2 starts, not great.
Yeah.
Not great.
All right, when we come back, kids, the official all ACC teams will be announced. First, second, third will come your way. See who falls where in one of the more competitive votes in recent memory. Next, Power Hour on Packer and Durham on ACCN.
Packer and Durham.